Dana.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Hello, dear. How are you?
I'm fine.
Happy birthday!
Thank you.
Happy birthday. Yeah. Everybody wish your favorite Whiskers host a happy, happy birthday. That's what the pause for.
You were supposed to say it out loud.
Happy birthday,
so
Elena.
I could sense it. I could feel it.
Did you feel it?
No.
Oh, come on, people. All right.
Well, because no one's listened to that yet. It's going to be in the future. I'll feel it.
Okay.
I can't feel something that hasn't happened yet.
So Thursday, there'll just be a glow around
Thursday,
you.
I'm gonna
Thursday,
I'm going to feel the
Friday,
vibes.
Saturday.
It's I'm going to have little, like, tickles going down my spine of like, ooh, birthday,
ooh.
Birthday.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's exciting. I'm finally the age I spent all of last year thinking I was.
Mm-hmm. Everyone out there, please tickle my wife.
It's okay. I now know how old I am.
Yay.
I don't expect it to last long. I feel like I'm
hopefully
fucked.
A year. I would...
I don't know. I feel like this is the start. Like, this is the downward start of, mm-hmm. like, things just not mm-hmm. going well until I die.
If only you had an expert neurologist like Dr. Wendy Smith looking after you. As we can see in Season 2, Episode 3 of SeaQuest.
I'm probably older than her at this point.
Of SeaQuest DSV, Sympathy for the Deep. This is written by Carlton Eastlake, who is our new producer. Previously, he was both a writer and supervising producer on Booker. Do you know about the television program Booker?
No.
It was a spinoff of 21 Jump Street. Amazing.
Oh, who knew?
Carlton Eastlake went on to both write and produce on Earth Final
oh,
Conflict.
Oh, I watched that. Not all of it, but I watched a lot of it, and I liked it.
And he wrote some very significant late-season Farscape episodes.
Oh!
Yes.
Oh.
His first appearance as a writer was the mid-season two-parter of season three.
Mm.
Some serious things go down,
mm-hmm.
if you know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is directed by Bruce Seth Green, not to be confused with just Seth Green. Very different person.
I understand why he goes by Bruce.
Yeah. He has been directing TV action since Magnum P.I. and Airwolf.
Mm.
After SeaQuest, he did some Babylon 5s, Buffy's, Angels, Roswell.
Wow.
And one episode of The Invisible Man.
Oh!
It's the eighth episode of season one.
Okay.
Featuring the guy who would go on to play DK in Tokyo Drift.
No, like, what happens in the eighth episode?
I don't know, but I do know it also featured the cranky scientist from The Stinger back, I think, the last time the Invisible Man came up on Whiskers.
Yeah, it's the one with the girl that has the supercomputer.
Okay.
Remember, so like... there's the girl, she has a supercomputer, and, like, people are out to kill her, and it's, like, the supercomputer, I think, gets, like, broken, and then she, like, has to go into hiding. You know, they have attractions to each other.
You gotta remember, I don't think we even had Moki when we watched season one together.
Well,
I think it's been 7-8 years at least.
Well, it's a shame. You should rewatch it. I should have made you rewatch it before we watch season two.
So we begin in the Miranda Colony.
You love Bobby Hobbs. Don't groan at me.
I love Bobby Hobbs so much.
You are not allowed to go, ugh,
Robert
the Invisible Man.
Hobbs, Special Agent Bobby Hobbs, is the greatest character ever put on television, my friend.
So why are we groaning?
The Miranda Colony is an undersea settlement at 12,700 feet deep.
That's right.
Where we lay our scene.
Yes, it is a community that is dedicated to natural resources and humankind and nonviolence and mutual support and harmony to all life.
As this message keeps playing, I love a city that tells me why I live there over and over.
Over
and
over, which is really interesting because it doesn't really seem like a colony, the more you learn about it, that would have a lot of guests, a lot of travel. So I don't know why we need a PSA as you arrive.
When you're on the CTA, there's just a voice telling you, Chicago is on the shores of beautiful Lake Michigan.
But yeah, so there's this PSA happening, and then it starts to short circuit with a harmony to all life, repeating and repeating as the camera pans to destruction.
It looks like a tornado hit a flea market.
Yes.
Yeah. There's just things on top of things.
And then there's a dude running for his life from a mob that has, like, sticks and crutches.
I love the one person who is wielding the like pole you hang an IV bag from,
yeah,
like a weapon. Like
I like
a club.
I like the person with the crutch. That's my favorite.
So this is a very like 1970s sci-fi film opening, right? We have all this stark modern architecture all over, and an experimental society gone mad.
Yes. And so, yeah, this dude's running for it. He runs to a door. He's banging on it like, Laura, let me in. And she opens the door and he comes in and he's like, oh, my God, I got this laser drill, but I've modified it to be a pulse rifle.
She is way more upset about him building a gun than she is about the angry mob breaking down the door.
Yeah, she's like, oh, my God, we can't use that. That's a weapon. I'm like, do you hear what's happening at your door, lady? Do you hear?
If there's ever a time, ma'am, please.
She decides, you know what's a good idea to do? I'm going to drug this man, who I think is the husband.
Yes, yes.
Gonna take
you need
a little,
to sleep.
Yes. Going to take one of those like little drug zappers of the future and just...
I think my friend Bones McCoy would call it a hypo spray.
Drug zapper.
Sure, sure.
And then, weirdly, once she drug zaps him... The mob is gone. She opens the door and she looks out and there's like no one there. They all dispersed very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly two children appear behind her.
Yes, and yes. Like, and she's like, oh, my babies, go to your room, lock the door, hide, don't open it for anyone, don't even open it for me.
This is what I realize, that throughout this entire episode, we never circle back on these children.
They're
or
just
the,
in the closet.
Or... the husband that she drug zapped. We don't see them again at all. Because, like, this lady sticks around. Spoilers. We never follow up on them.
Never. Not a single time. No, those kids are going to starve in there. And she turns and sees herself in a mirror mounted on the wall of her undersea apartment. And suddenly she's like 30 years older. Oh.
I'd say like 40 years older.
She's very old.
She looks like she's on her deathbed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like she's just going to turn to dust and be like, Rapunzel, no!
Yeah, that's
yeah,
how it goes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Turning like the, you know, dusty Mother Gothel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Makes sense. She locked children in rooms.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
But meanwhile, up on the surface, in a seaside cafe,
yes,
there is the most elaborate coffee machine you could possibly imagine.
You know why? Because apparently a kilo of coffee beans costs $250 now.
So this teaches us some more things about the world of Sequest, as imagined in Sequest Season 2. We already knew that the ecology of the tropics has been completely ruined.
Yes.
So there's your supply and demand. Coffee is the most expensive thing in the world. But we're working on the metric system for weights and measures.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
And so, yeah, Bridger is there reading the paper, having his real cup of coffee.
No free refills on coffee anymore.
No.
No siree, Bob.
And I'm just like, so I guess they have fake coffee.
They must have fake coffee.
They have fake coffee the rest of the time. Doesn't sound like a great place to live. And then Bridger is interrupted by staff at the restaurant handing him a vid screen.
Excuse me, this is a calculator.
It's a big calculator.
That they composite the face of Tim O'Neill on to connect a call.
I just love the concept, though, that even this far in the future, no one has personal communication devices. And they we can still call restaurants and be like, yes, sir, I know where you were. I need to talk with Bridger, please. Yes, you'll know who he is by this description. Like, what?
He's the very charming man who's sitting alone.
They have little walkie-talkies.
Well, maybe, maybe the description thing is the easiest thing to explain because, like, O'Neill just has a little 8x10 headshot.
This dude.
This one.
This one.
This call is for this man.
I need to talk to the extremely sexy old man. Yes, that one. You'll know him. Imagine if he was a little younger and in, like, tight jazz pants. Or cut off booty shorts. On a boat.
Well, speaking of Jaws.
Or imagine him, no suit, skin.
There we go.
And they're like, oh, yes, I know exactly the one.
I've been imagining him that way for hours.
He's had a lot of coffee.
He's in debt. He's in such
like
severe
debt. $5,000 worth of coffee at this point.
For one thing, how's he not exploded from the caffeine?
It's all decaf. That's the worst thing, is you can get real coffee, but it's all decaf.
I'm just glad he's got that UEO expense account to keep him solvent through the whole thing.
Yeah, but if he wanted it with caffeine, it'd be $500 a kilo.
I had a hunch about the filming location here.
Yeah.
And after viewing and before recording, I checked and I was exactly right.
You were.
This is filmed in the park of Universal Studios Orlando.
It is, yeah. In the Jaws area.
Well, next to the Jaws area, with the Jaws area in the background. So it looks like, you know, a seaside town. A seaside town that happens to have a building labeled Quint's Nautical Treasures. The former Jaws Lands gift shop is in the background as Bridger is like having his coffee on the boardwalk surrounding a restaurant that is still there.
Yes.
Where you and I ate with your godmother when we visited a few years ago.
We did. It was pretty good.
Hi, Betty. You're fun. I like you a lot.
I don't think she listens to this one.
That's good.
I wouldn't really want her to. I don't really want anyone I know to listen to this show. I only want complete strangers. Or people I've met a couple times, but like, I don't see you daily.
Right,
I don't see you weekly. Internet strangers. Internet friends.
If people first encountered this side of you.
Yes.
Yes.
Then yes, I want you to listen.
But
if you did not encounter this first, I don't want you here. I like to keep things separate.
But this bit of location filming reminds me of some similar things we checked too late to get in last week's episode. Specifically, that the moving walkway underneath a shark tank.
Yes, I Googled that. I was so proud of myself.
Where Bridger and the UEO general first have their conversation early in that episode is the shark building at SeaWorld Orlando.
It is. It's still there. You can still go on that moving platform.
So I have to presume that, like, the aquarium interrogation room may have been SeaWorld Orlando.
Well, and remember, I said it looked like the hallways into like a museum like IMAX type thing. And I absolutely am like, is that what it is? Is it like that type of thing at SeaWorld?
Were the exteriors done in SeaWorld Orlando, which a place I've never been, but I know it has a reputation for really great like floral landscaping and terraces and you know, water features.
Maybe.
But the shark tunnel, definitely. 100%.
It's absolutely still there. You can go pretend to do that. On this call that is interrupting him, he has a call coming into the Sequest from Laura. Laura from the Miranda colony.
The woman who drug zappered?
Drug zapped
her husband.
Yes. And Bridger's all like, oh, Laura.
Yeah, he checks his hair.
Fix.
Bridger's on the market. He went on 2 dates with Westphalen and suddenly he's on OkCupid.
Yeah, he's like, Laura, is that you? And she's like, oh my god, I don't know if you can hear me. I don't know if I'm hallucinating. Are you actually there? We're all gonna die. Help us.
Her answer to is that really you is, I'm not sure.
That's just what you want to hear.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And with that, we get the opening credits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And back in the action, we are aboard SeaQuest. Bridger is preparing to arrive in a situation he doesn't know what it is.
No.
They're on the approach. There is no communications. He's saying, hey, Brody, set up a fire team just in case. And Brody's like, these are a bunch of granola peacenik weirdos. What are you talking about?
He's like, humor me. Just go. Ford's like, are you sure you want to do this? Are we sure we're going to go in blind?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Bridger's like, we absolutely are. Let me tell you, Jonathan, I almost married this girl. I proposed to her and she turned me down cold before I met Carol. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, station buddy here, we got to go check this out.
Station buddies continue.
We love a station buddy in this.
Like, who is Lucas leaning over at some
Ortiz,
point?
Ortiz, I think.
Everyone loves to just loom over Ortiz.
It's all the bridge buddies. We just gotta look over shoulders and, like, scoot on in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are we bridge buddies when we record?
Yes.
We're bridge buddies because we're like, in the shot. We're in the frame of the mic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bridge buddies. It's very exciting.
So
I'm glad I can be your buddy.
You're my best buddy.
Yeah.
You're my best friend, and I love you forever.
I love you, too. Moki is my best buddy.
Okay.
Can we, like, get her right here, too? Can we be a trio of buddies?
Absolutely. There's no limit on buddies.
Okay.
So the SeaQuest docks and seals their
fate.
Sure. I was going to say, like, clamps, but okay.
That, too.
And the boarding party is on. It is Bridger, it is Brody, and nameless Brody boys.
And Wendy.
And Wendy is come aboard because she's like, hey, there's psychological things happening here. I want to be involved. And Bridger says, yes, that is your job.
But here's the thing. Get that lady a jumpsuit. Okay? Everyone else has a jumpsuit. Get her a doctor jumpsuit, whatever. Mm-hmm. She needs a jumpsuit. She can't be going on missions in just her everyday clothes.
She dresses like a therapist and not like a crew member.
Yeah.
Yeah. Westphalen, yeah, had a lab coat.
And a jumpsuit.
And
they
yeah.
had the science jumpsuit.
And the science jumpsuit.
Yeah.
The science jumpsuit has disappeared. I guess they forgot to pack them in a box from Los Angeles to Orlando.
It's late. I do really like, though, I guess we should talk about this. I love the season 2, and in it will be season 3 as well, but season 2 jumpsuit.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
The ribbing over the shoulders.
The ribbing.
The straps.
The straps. The lack of turtleneck is great also, but I love the season 2 jumpsuit.
Yeah,
I think it's good. So good.
It's pretty good. It's a good, it's a good costume. It
it's
really
good.
Is.
It's a good one. Yeah, I think it's an improvement. Mm-hmm, I just think there should be a science version.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Different shade of blue, just like season 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they arrive, and they are almost immediately overwhelmed with, shall we say, the welcome party?
Yes.
You know there's a riot happening in here, right?
Well, Laura didn't really say that.
No.
She didn't get into the details, but yeah. They're being rushed by a ton of people who are like, oh my god, get me out of here. I want to get on your boat.
Mm-hmm,
and they're like, no.
They're all so scared. And and because no one is helping them in their fear, they are becoming angry. And they are about to be the crazed, rapacious mob that they are afraid of in the first place.
Yes. And so they are setting up a perimeter, and as they're doing that, people rush them from another angle, but it's like, hey, this is okay, because this is Laura, the girl I almost married.
Yeah, this is the good mob.
And she introduces them to Dr. Royce Shelton.
Yes, Royce Shelton, who this whole...
Like the colony leader.
This colony is the brainchild of Dr. Royce Shelton. He is played by Robert Foxworth, who voices Ratchet in all the Transformers movies.
Oh.
I don't know which one that is.
I don't know.
But, you know
what? It's not the yellow one.
While we're talking about Universal Studios Orlando, I guess. Hey, the Transformers movies.
Did he voice it for the ride?
You know what? I'm going to look up which one is Ratchet.
It is a yellow one.
It's a different yellow one.
It's a different yellow one. How can you have more than one yellow one?
I love the Transformers wiki lists movie Ratchet's weapons as sticky grenades, beam fusion energon guns, and healing laser.
What? How's that work?
Because he's the medic, you see.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Does he transform into like an ambulance?
Probably.
Why is he called Ratchet then?
It's something you use to do automobile repair.
Oh, so it's just like a different form of
of
first aid.
It's like calling a human medic scalpel or something.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
Why don't paramedics have nicknames?
I bet they do.
They should have nicknames like camp names. I'm Scalper. And I'm Heart Monitor.
I'm Drugs.
I'm Fentanyl.
Go get me drugs. No, the guy drugs. No, just give me drugs. Give me drugs.
And then there's some poor person who's bedpan. And they're like, all the other camp names were taken. I went to a really big school. Like, this was the only one that was left. Yeah.
I'd be called Splint. They could call me Splint.
Splint.
I think that's a pretty cool nickname.
Yeah. What would mine be?
Gorgeous.
No.
No?
No, that doesn't work.
X-ray.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm helpful, but deadly.
You're best in controlled situations in limited amounts.
Yes, actually. This is so... I am X-ray. Absolutely.
Your penetrating point of view?
Huh?
Yeah.
Never has anything felt so right.
Weighted vest, like a big hug.
Yeah. Slowly going to kill you.
So Dr. Shelton is giving our Sequest crew members the rundown about...
how the colony formed.
Yes. Miranda Colony. And the idea is to make the perfect colony. To be nonviolent. To have no crime. And he has like a stack of printouts to show that it was working.
Yes, look at our crime rates.
Yeah, they were
very low.
Mm-hmm. Until about 4 weeks ago, something happened, something changed, and it first showed up as a wave of domestic abuse.
Yes.
But from there, it was, you know, fights in the street, and it was robberies and all sorts of things.
Murder, it seems we're on the verge of, if we haven't already.
And then came the mutations. Bum, bum, bah.
She's like, here, let me take you to see these. These are our earliest patients. They're the most violent. And so she pulls back the curtain and she looks at the patient and you see like a fucking demon.
That's a demon man. There's a demon man. He's got like fangs. He's got like double teeth.
He's got like horns starting to protrude out, like red eyes.
Yeah.
And she's like, look at them. They're all like this. And like Bridger pulls back the curtain and just sees like a dude with a fever.
Just a really angry man in bed.
I mean, honestly, I was like, that looks like a dude who's grumpy from his fever. Just kind of like in a fever dream. But like, fine. Mm-hmm. And he's like, nothing's wrong with this person. What are you talking about?
And his ex is like, oh, I was afraid you would say that. We can't tell anymore if we're hallucinating or not. And we're the sanest ones in the colony.
I'm a little concerned if you think you're the sanest ones. And you were first the ones, though, that you're like, these were our earliest like people who were affected. So you were the first ones to start locking people up?
I keep sliding slices of cheese under the door. It's something I read from your notes, Captain.
In the closet?
Yeah.
To the children?
To the children.
It's like, here, have a slice of American cheese. Mm-hmm. You're fine. You'll be fine.
It's how Lucas survived for weeks. We went over this.
I know. There's fan fiction out there about it by now, I'm sure. hiding in like a grate, like just little cheese. So they declare martial law on the colony.
As sane people would do in a situation like this.
Yes. Brody starts handing out, you know, gear. And Dagwood's like, I want to help. How can I help?
And so Dagwood gets an assignment to guard some valves inside.
They are oxygen valves, so they at least sound like they might be important.
Those are important valves.
Yeah.
And Dagwood runs.
He's so excited.
He's so excited to have a job.
I'll say it's nice for Brody to include him. Even though he's definitely, like, you know, giving him a crap job. at least, again, it's something that, like, well, oxygen is important. So yes. I'm going to pretend those are, we're going to actually have someone there.
Who's better at protecting a big valve than the guy that can lift 800 pounds?
True. He can just, like, throw people if they try to touch the valves.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
On the bridge, Ford is watching the video feed of this rampaging mob and is arguing for personal responsibility in the face of these psychological riots.
Yes. As Wendy is arguing that this is definitely a medical condition. And I'm like, I'm not sure either of you are right.
And in the end, I think you're right, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not responsible for their actions, but I don't think you'd find anything that is actually happening here in a diagnostic guide.
No.
There's no insurance code for this.
So Bridger's like, hey, Wendy, go research shit. Tony, go use your gills and swim around and see if someone sabotaged shit. And hey, Lucas, go check databases. And everyone goes about their little jobs. Wendy goes to talk to Dr. Shelton and is like, hey, I read some of your shit before, like your research. That's what I mean by shit. It kind of seems like these levels of like lack of crime are only something that happens in a police state. Is there something you want to tell me?
Dr. Shelton, are you running a secret police?
He's like, no! We just selected really, really good people, which I would like to point out, as he just said, they selected really good people, which means no one is visiting this fucking colony. So why is there a PSA telling you about the colony?
They have pride. Local pride.
Seems a little like propaganda.
We selected only the very best people in a eugenic sense. Everything's fine and normal and good.
And they have to listen to this recording five times in a row every 5 minutes. And they must recite it 10 times before they go to bed. It's totally normal and fine.
I pledge allegiance to Dr. Shelton.
And the colony. In Miranda's name we pray. On the Sequest, Laura is looking in the mirror and like fluffing her hair. Bridger comes in and she just throws herself at him.
Cindy from the beach is going to be so upset.
Cindy from the beach is on to like her 50th man already.
Good for her.
Good for her. Yeah. I'm not faulting her, but like Cindy ain't waiting for Bridger.
No, she's waiting for Lucas. She said, gosh.
She's absolutely not Lucas. Move on. Cindy doesn't know your name anymore. And so, yeah, she throws herself at Bridger, and she's just like, you know, I was thinking about us. I was remembering how you almost got court-martialed for me, sneaking me into the base.
But now you're in charge. No one can tell you what to do, big man.
And she, like, grabs his face and, like, buries herself in him and is like, I love you. I've always loved you. And he's like, something's wrong here. You okay? What's going on? And then suddenly there are like garbled voices.
Yeah.
And everyone's like pausing and freezing and like grabbing their heads in shock.
There's some sort of wave emanating, rocking around the domes of Miranda Colony and around Sequest and the whole surrounding ocean.
And then we go to some random guards on the colony that decide to like start being really frat bros. each other.
These are a pair of Brody boys. These are Sequest crew.
Yeah.
And as they're broing out together, this young lady, this like, what is she, like 19 or something?
She's like 19 to 23.
And she yells, my store, they're looting my store.
Which makes me think, though.
This is a very entrepreneurial colony. We have small business owners at any age.
True. I was going to say, though, she seems really fucking sane in this entire scene. So I'm really questioning Laura and her. We're the sanest people here. No, your grocery store girl is.
She should be running the joint.
So then after she like yells all this, two dudes come out of her store with their loot in paper grocery bags.
Which are Sequest Navy soldiers. They shoot the bags of groceries.
Yes.
And their electro pulse guns, little balls of electricity shoot the groceries.
And make them drop it. And then they shoot the dudes.
Uh-huh.
Who still run away, though. They just got like electrocuted, but they're fine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she's like, are you gonna like chase after them? And that's when they decide to turn on her.
Yeah. As soon as they're finished doing their chest bumps, they're like, hey, there's a chest I'd like to bump. They don't like anyone questioning their authority and decide to just paw all over the victim here. It's very, very clear where their intents lie.
Yes.
In assaulting this member of the Miranda Colony community.
But then Dagwood appears.
Dagwood!
And he is like, Tyler, Ricky, what are you doing?
He's gotten paella with these dudes too.
Everyone takes him for
paella. Everyone takes him for
it's
paella.
It's like initiation to be Dagwood's friend.
Dagwood has never eaten from the commissary. It's paella 24/7.
And the dudes say very derogatory things to Dagwood. Mm-hmm. And then one of them punches him. And he's like, oh, fuck no. And throws them both. Just like lifts them up like a bag of potatoes and tosses them. And then radios to the Sequest that everybody's going crazy and he needs help.
As Royce Shelton takes a look at everything happening around him and says, oh God, what have I done?
And then another energy pulse comes through the place and he grabs his head and screams in agony. It's very dramatic.
It's very dramatic. We fade out to commercial and come back in on hyper-aggressive Brody and Bridger shouting at each other.
Yes.
Because Bridger wants these two, like, brought up on charges, kicked out of the military. And you know what? Brody, it happened on your watch. You get out of here, too. You're unfit to lead men.
And Brody is like, well, maybe she was just asking for it.
Whoa, Brody. Whoa.
Which Bridger, in his not normal state, still at least is like, oh, so everyone's just some barbarians. Like, what the fuck? Like, no, absolutely. Get out of here.
So they have this big, big fight. And Wendy's like, hey, calm down. You're not being yourself. I checked everyone's voice print and retinal scan, which is apparently some sort of violation of everyone's privacy.
Apparently.
To discover that the crew all fit the profile of criminal psychopaths.
Serial killer gene. We are one step away from
She's
that.
She's testing for the serial killer gene, yes. So, like, her argument is something in the environment is making everyone fall to their worst self. That is why Bridger is so testy. That is why Brody is
deep down a rapist?
Yes.
Because here's the thing, like,
and she is really nosy and violates people's privacy. That's her symptom?
It's so weird. Because again, like, Bridger, in this whole thing of like, whoa, your agitation.
Yes,
that
that's
you normally
the word she uses.
Hold, like, below your skin is like coming out. And I'm like, okay, so Bridger, when he's at his worst, is still like, rape is bad and fuck all those motherfuckers. Yeah. We're gonna have them all court-martialed. This bullshit.
We're gonna keel haul them 20,000 feet below.
We don't do that. And Brody's like, what's wrong with the little rape? Excuse me, writers? What? What?
And, like, we just met Brody. It's not like we can look to the good times, you know, and see just how much this is an aberration. This is what we have to go on.
I'm just like, what the fuck?
But Bridger is not taking this. He's so agitated he won't be talked to about how agitated he is. Unless it comes from another source.
Yes. And that source needs to be Darwin.
Darwin is here. Darwin to the rescue. Apparently this only affects human brains. Because Darwin pops up and is like, Bridger, scare Darwin! Say angry things!
And Bridger is like... going towards him, like, very tense, very agitated.
How dare you say this to me?
And, like, Darwin says it again, and it, like, snaps him out of it. He just realizes, like, oh my god, no. I can't hurt my dolphin.
I do like Roy's acting in this scene. Like, he is a different person in this moment.
Yeah.
And, like... yeah, we have seen over the last, like, 28-ish episodes, Bridger gets agitated. It usually just comes out in little puffs of sarcasm, roll the eyes, say something snide, and then, you know, straighten his shirt and get back to hero shit. But he just lives in it and festers, and he's a different man. And, like, dang, that's Roy.
Yeah. So, yeah, that snaps him out of it, and he, like, calls Brody over, who's, like, chilled down a bit too. We need to look each other in the eyes.
We
need to remember how we all matter to each other,
which is going to be a problem with some of you people. I don't know, from Adam, you just got here.
But those two dudes, they're still being like fucking court-martialed. That's some bullshit. We don't accept that.
Psychic manipulation is not a defense.
We go out to Tony, who is still swimming around outside in the ocean.
I like his little headband-mounted flashlight.
Yes.
That's nice.
That has a little, like, mic that actually comes to, like, his throat. Yeah, so he can, you know, talk.
He can talk by, like, sub-vocalizing because his lungs aren't full of air to make, like, actual speech. There's some thought. There's some thought in the prop design, and it's good. It's really good.
Yeah. So he's swimming around outside, checking things out. It's like, hey, I haven't really seen anything, Ortiz. But then all of a sudden he notices some light. Some light at the top of, like, a dome as part of the colony. He swims on up.
There's a guy in a mechanized dive suit, like two generations behind the thing Ford was rolling around in back in Abalon, right? And he is tapping into this high voltage power cable for some nefarious purpose.
Yeah. Doing some, like, welding or something, it kind of seems like, from the flashes, but it's, like, tapping into stuff. Yeah. And it is Dr. Shelton.
Yes.
And Tony is all like, oh, dude, like, I gotta take you back. Like, you're doing stuff you shouldn't be doing. But Dr. Shelton, like, pushes him away and starts going to the surface, and Tony gets zapped.
He gets zapped, and his gills seize up. Oh, no!
Yes. And he's, like, has just enough time to, like, radio to the Sequest that, like, his gills are... He says his gills are gone, and he can't breathe. And so they send Darwin out to go save him, to go find him.
Yeah.
And Darwin swims out there. And my favorite thing happens where Darwin, like, you see Darwin's little mouth biting at Tony's belt.
Yeah.
To, like, drag him back to the Sequest because he's unconscious.
It's very good. It's very good. So they save the life of Tony Piccolo. The fish man is saved from drowning.
He's got to take Darwin for some paella now.
Get a seafood paella. Yeah. I'm sure Darwin would enjoy some shrimp and clams.
Yeah.
So while they were, like, sending the Whiskers out to look for Piccolo, they also found what Lucas identifies as a polarized chaos path.
Yes.
You can only see it if you're looking from just the right angle. What are the odds?
It's a good thing that Whisker was in the right spot at the right time. Yeah. And so it is, you know, a shockwave.
Yes.
But there's nothing saying there should be a shockwave.
So we gotta follow it and see what's making this shockwave that shouldn't be.
Yeah. Tony is also unconscious but alive. He's okay. Yeah. We're good. Made it back. Somehow that did not drown him in all the time it took.
Well, Darwin is very fast.
Darwin is so fast.
He's a good boy.
He's such a good boy.
So Sequest has to follow this chaos path, and Brody's like, hey, you're leaving me in hell? What? Please don't.
Well, you did say some things that I think you need to think about.
Yeah, Brody, this is an assignment that's very important, and I have to believe you are asking for it. So enjoy.
Enjoy. Enjoy your time. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're following
the chaos path.
They get to like an energy barrier.
In a trench
that's a mile down. And so they go through, and there's a huge noise and another zap to everyone.
And everyone is getting frightened. They're seeing some sort of haze, some sort of visual wave happening around them, which O'Neill identifies as, quote, the face of God.
Yes. And Lucas is like, it's a chaos cloud.
It's a chaos cloud. Quote, a total reversal of all physical laws. It shouldn't exist. Yeah, you're right. That is a thing that should not exist.
You know what should also not exist? Hitchcock, apparently, because she's in this episode for one of two scenes. In her little driving chair being
you
like...
You mean Henderson?
Yes, I wrote Hitchcock. Damn it.
Yeah, she exists just to drive. If there is a scene of intense driving through turbulence, that is when and only when you will see Lonnie
Henderson
in this episode. Not Hitchcock.
She's like, oh, it's drawing us in. I can't hold it. Very dramatic.
She believes she is being electrocuted, but everyone assures her that no, it's just the hallucinations. You're fine. Ford believes they have lost all buoyancy, but everyone assures him, no, it's just the hallucinations. The ship is okay. And by supporting one another, they manage to get out of this turbulence.
Yes. And they're like, oh my gosh, we're out. Okay, everything's back to normal. We're okay. Mm-hmm. And Wendy's like, I don't think we are. I think it's evil and it's growing.
Bum, bum, bum.
So maybe O'Neill was right.
Maybe. God is evil and growing.
Yeah. Explains so much.
So on the other side of the commercial, we are looking at our readings of the local area, and the charts here show a perfectly featureless trench.
Yes, there's nothing there.
In a way that no natural formation is featureless. Clearly, there are signs of a cover-up.
And of course, Lucas is the one to discover this. He's like, this is wrong. I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
It's hacking time.
Hacking time. Bridger radios Brody, and he's like, it's bad! It's really bad! Someone tried to torch us with a homemade flamethrower! Yeah, it's bad! As Dagwood's, like, using a fire extinguisher to put it out.
We do see, like, this local shouting, cleanse yourself with fire, as he's dragged away.
Maybe the whole god thing is, yeah, you know?
Yeah. They're... From here on out, in case it wasn't before, this episode is about to get very religious.
Yes.
We start with demons, and now it's going to get religious. So, yeah, hey.
But Bridger's like, hey, and this is a weird thing. It's a weird choice, because he's like, hey, is your Model K affected? Instead of, like, is Dagwood affected?
Right?
I was like, writer, you don't know Bridger at this point.
Yeah.
Like, he... After, like, that first episode, there should be no point where he refers to Dagwood as a Model K.
Right. That is the language choice we used to set aside asshole UEO guy.
Yeah.
Just one episode previous.
Yeah.
And now it's, well, you know, he's in the evil cloud face of God.
I guess we're going with, like, he's agitated.
He's so agitated.
Like, but I'm like, Bridger doesn't, he's keel-hauling rapists. You think he's going to say the Model K? I don't think so.
Especially in the call when he's like, maybe ask him what's up, because he seems unaffected.
Ask Dagwood what he would do.
Put the guy I refuse to name in charge. This is a thing that makes sense for a character to say.
So instead of what would Jesus do bracelets, we're going to have what would Dagwood do bracelets. Yeah.
What would Model K do?
No.
No. It is a messed up. It's wrong.
It's wrong. It's wrong. So Brody does go to Dagwon and is like, "Hey, so what would you do? What should we do?" And he's like, "I would get everyone in the same place, and we would tell stories, and we would sing." And Brody's like, "So like church?"
And Dagwood does not know what a church is.
Like, what's that? I don't know what that is.
And Brody tells him, "Well, you're about to find out." But that's not the end of the conversation, because Dagwood has hesitations. He has thoughts.
Yes. And so he's like thinking about it, and he's like, "Hey, so because I'm not affected, does that mean I'm not human?"
Mm-hmm.
And Brody, in his very weird way, is... It's a really weird saying.
Yeah. Like, it starts with, like, "Yeah, no wonder they thought you were defective." And Dagwood's like, "What the fuck is that supposed to mean?"
And what he really means is, like, you don't have a mean bone in your body. You're, like, too good for this world. We could all use a lot more of you.
So you couldn't possibly be the super soldier, so you are defective. What a weird square one to start with, Brody.
Thank you for the compliment. I think,
but
I you're on thin ice, man. Thin ice.
Like, this scene speaks to where I think Dagwood is at his best, which is when Dagwood is written to have a difference in frame of reference.
Yeah,
where that is what sets Dagwood and the workings of his mind apart.
Mm-hmm.
The benchmark that I'm always going to go to from the episode Daggers is, you know, my hands are too big.
Mm-hmm.
We see that Dagwood has a lot of issues about self-perception, perception of his body, but he can't communicate that. What he can say is, "My hands are too big."
Yeah.
And this is in that line.
Yeah. And when they give him, like, they give him moments of where he's, where, like, this is the first of many times through the season where people will turn to him for advice. Will turn to, "You see things differently. You're seeing what I can't see. What do we do? What do I need? What am I doing wrong?"
And yes, this does constantly rub up against, like, the magical disabled person.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Like, there's... Yeah.
There's,
we dance on both sides of that line, and I'm sure there are people who are going to say, "No, we don't. We're always on one side of that line."
It's problematic.
Yeah,
it's problematic.
but even so, we can and I think should point out when within that realm it's better, because there's times when it's worse.
Yes.
Oh boy.
Yes. Laura on the Sequest goes to Wendy and is like, "Hey, you should probe my brain, and I'm giving you permission, because there's apparently laws where you can't do that without permission." And I'm like, does she know that? Because, like, a girl is, like, probing everyone all the fucking time.
I mean, if that is true, that's a difference between season one and season two. Unless the trio from the Library of Alexandria episode were extra legal agents working outside the law, which might be the case.
Like, there was, in that episode, they're operating in different worlds.
Sure.
And rules. But I think that episode in season one was hinting at the, how people are scared and they can't, like, live in normal society because of things. And it definitely is not stuff that would have happened just in, like, 2 years. But there is kind of a trajectory, I feel like,
of where
it was going.
As there are more psychics, more public, there is a sort of backlash or a pumping of brakes.
Yes.
For there to be a global UEO law against...
probing without permission.
Yes.
Consent. It's important.
Brody!
And so Wendy's like, "Okay, let me probe your brain." And she does, and
she finds nothing useful to the problem of madness and aggression in Miranda.
Mm-mm. So she comes out of her room and is all, like, holding her head in the hall, and Bridger walks on up and is like, "Hey, what's going on? Are you okay?" And she's like, "Oh, yeah, I just probed Laura. She doesn't know anything."
Except that she loves you so much.
She's loved you. She's loved you forever. She still loves you. That's not a lie.
She just had a weird idea about family and marriage. She was scared, but she wanted to say yes deep in her heart.
And he's like, okay. And she's like, I'm going to go probe Dr. Shelton now.
I'm going to see if he wants to marry you, Captain.
Everyone does. I do.
Bridger's got babes.
All the babes.
There's a middle-aged lady in every port of the world with Bridger's name on her.
It's like,
they
hey,
got
hey.
Tattoos.
Hey. So the Sequest gets hit with another energy surge, and we are on the bridge. Lucas is working away and kind of having a little bit of a freak out of self-doubt.
Yeah.
That, like, is any of this even real? Maybe I'm not real. Maybe I'm just programmed to think I'm real.
Lucas is starting to wonder if he's a brain in a jar.
Yes. Which, you know what? Is probably a real nightmare of his, actually.
Yeah.
It says a lot about him.
And Ford is there to keep him grounded, to protect him, because we're going to get through this by remembering what we mean to each other.
Yes, and that, like, the energy is making you believe you can't do this, but you can do it. Mm-hmm. You are real. And, you're a real boy, Lucas.
And if, like, Wendy's problem that is awakening in herself is no respect for boundaries, and if Bridger's is being all cranky, this scene would suggest that Lucas's is overthinking and overcomplicating. And you know what? I like that. That's good. That's smart. Yeah. Because the reason his hack can't work is because he's doing, like, the most overcomplicated thing he can come up with. He didn't even try to just, like, brute force the password.
Yeah, and so Ford's like, well, do the thing you would normally do first.
So
the opposite of what you're doing right now.
So he brute forces the password and cracks the system wide open.
And it works. And so what we find out is that 10 years ago, there was a research facility in the trench called the Deep Fire Project. And you know who was the owner and project director? Dr. Shelton.
And this is long, long before Miranda even existed. This was here first.
But guess what? No one can find Dr. Shelton. Mm-hmm. He's missing.
Well, he was in a suit that got set off who knows where.
Yes. And so they're like, oh man, how far could that suit get?
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? There's an island that's reachable with that suit. And so they're like, let's go.
And so they find him tying up a boat on a dock, and he gets surrounded by sleeveless wetsuit commandos.
Yeah. Gotta show off those muscles. And so they stop him, and they're like, what were you gonna do? And he was like, I was gonna blow myself to kingdom come, because I made a pact with the devil.
And now there's nowhere to hide. I'm in the Transformers movie.
And he's like, well, I guess you found me, so let me pull out my blueprints. This was the parapsychology center I built under the water.
Uh-huh, because psychics are better down where it's wetter.
It's isolated.
It's There isn't the human static is the phrase that the Dr. Smith uses.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, it was going great. I was making great strides in my research until all the staff started to kill each other. Don't know why that happened.
So then he built Miranda.
And he was like, you know what? Let me keep doing my research there. At least I don't have to pay these people. They pay me.
So this little facility in the trench, the point of this facility was to try to put nonviolent thoughts into people. And that didn't work. That led to the first failure. What he could do is suck the darkness out of people.
Yes.
And that's what was happening, siphoning all of the negative impulses out of people. And that's what kept Miranda the hunkiest, doriest place in planet Earth.
Yeah. And Wendy and everyone's like, but there's all these people that have said if you suck the evil out, then there's no balance for the good. And then, like, the evil over... You can't do that.
And I love Shelton's lines, like, we know about matter and antimatter. What about life and anti-life?
So death? Like...
Well, what? The anti-life equation is a little more complicated than that. Really, it's Jack Kirby's grand metaphor for fascism and the authoritarian impulse.
Oh. Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. Is that what he was going for in this scene here?
I mean, I hope Clairton Eastlake knows about Jack Kirby in the Fourth World. I would like to believe that's true.
Okay.
But what has happened? What has happened to Miranda is that the bad vibe vacuum is full.
Yeah.
And it's too full of bad vibes. And so the power drain is too great. So the evil is leaking out. And that is why he was trying to hook power cables up to Sequest to jumpstart the evil vacuum.
Yeah. So it's the thing where your, like, vacuum bag is too full, so it starts spewing the dirt back out.
which can be fixed, in this case, with a bigger battery.
Apparently.
At least for a while, until it gets fuller again, yeah.
So yeah, it's just gonna keep growing until it consumes everything, like, if we, you know... This is the end. The devil's coming. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, we went into, like, that trench, and, like, we could fight it. We could go fight this. We could take this thing down. And he's like, no, we can't. It's the devil. And they're like, well, you don't have a choice. We're gonna go.
Quote, you're going to meet the devil, and we're all going to die in the attempt. Bum, bum, bum. Every act in this, every commercial could be preceded by bum, bum, bum.
So meanwhile, Brody has made church.
Brody has made sitting on the floor church.
And it's like...
in the great big open area.
Everyone ignore shit and just, like, sing.
Mm-hmm.
And so this random ass woman just starts belting Amazing Grace.
And she's going for it. She's doing runs. She's putting some stank on this song.
Yeah.
And this is the musical episode.
Yeah. And everyone joins in. Mm-hmm. And what I love is Dagwood in the back, who's like, I've never heard this song in my life, so I'm going to sing, but like 2 seconds behind everyone as I learn the words. Uh-huh. And Brody's just there like, yes, singing. I will sing too. I guess. Jesus, it's working. What?
Like, this episode wants to talk about life and death as forces, as primordial things. As can our better selves exist without our dark side? These are the things it's wrestling with. This is good. This is cool. A shortcoming that I wish it didn't have is the other side is only represented religiously.
Yes.
Like, there is no one who is, like, really enjoying their hobbies or, like, looking at pictures of their family, or singing anything but a hymn. It's only religious, and it's only Christianity, for that matter.
Yes. Yeah. And that's incredibly problematic.
And we see a wide swath of the dark side, of the negative impulse, of anti-life.
Of all the different ways it manifests. But not all the different ways that you can overcome it.
Right. We get Christianity and the crew of the Sequest to believe in each other. That's really... there is two, but that's the only two.
And it would be nice to see other forms taking place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or, like, they could do this, and, like, Brody could have done the, like, church thing, but, like, if they would have done a different song choice.
Mm-hmm.
A non-religious thing. Some classic, you know, lollipop, lollipop.
Yeah,
I would love
if they saved the colony with the power of Buddy Holly.
Right? Like, it would have been great.
Every day, we're gonna die.
Every day, we're gonna drown.
Yeah.
It would have been great.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have this uplifting moment of...
Or a moment where, like, Brody's, like, radioing with Lucas, like, I know you're busy. I know you're busy right now, but can you just pipe me in some tunes, dude? And he's like, why are you calling me? Because you're young.
You've got the DJ set. Yeah.
Come on, I just need a song that people can sing to. And he's like, okay, fine, I got you.
The Sonic the Hedgehog 2 soundtrack. Yeah. God damn it, there's no words to this.
I need a song, and I need it to be soothing. Have you heard of Lord of the Rings? Enya, go.
Chelsea Dagger starts playing.
Oh my god, yes!
The whole comedy did it. Did the Blackhawks just win a game? What's this?
But amazing. So, or because Lucas is a really big baseball fan.
Yes,
it's the seventh inning stretch.
Just sing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game."
Take me out to. That would have been great for Brody to have to lead it.
Yes, yes.
It's like the only song he knows that he can that would sing. Be right? Perfect. He's like, okay, guys, sing, and like no one does. So he's like, okay, I guess I will.
It's
take me.
It's a song about like. It is a collective uh-huh. song that is only sung in large groups.
Uh-huh.
It is about having a good time in the park.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the...
Both teams come together no matter what right. you are.
What is more pro-life than the promise of sport, of excellence?
Yeah.
The promise of peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
Yes.
And it's public domain. They could have take me out to the ball game.
Such a missed fucking opportunity.
There is drama, there is texture, there is interest in treating Take Me Out to the Ball Game as a hymn
mm-hmm.
that just isn't there for treating a hymn as a hymn. Yeah, doy.
Yeah. Like- Well, and it would have, again, it would have been so great to have Brody do it mm-hmm, and be put mm-hmm. in that situation where he does have to, like, fix it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, like, I could just see the moment of where he, like, looks at Dagwood, like, help, and Dagwood's like, I don't know, you go ahead. And he's like, okay, and like, he's like, you got it, dude.
That would have been the perfect song.
Oh, and if Dagwood had his Sequest hat, like his baseball hat,
he put it over his heart.
Either over his heart or he like puts it on Brody's head, like here, baseball. Either would have been acceptable.
Oh, so meanwhile on Sequest, Bridger is giving the great big speech about how it's your choice whether you sail with us into the heart of the beast. And of course, everyone stays because they talked about this ahead of time. Captain, we're with you.
Yes. Which this was a weird thing because no one told Lucas to leave. I guess that's how you know he's grown up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He must have turned 18 somewhere in these 18 various
now.
Time skips.
All fine.
It's his responsibility to choose.
So they go through the energy mm-hmm, field mm-hmm. in following the cloud, and you know, Ortiz is shouting out that the sea is so cold on these readings that it should be frozen solid.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, on the colony, someone's freaking out about the Angel of Death coming.
As Brody shouts, "Hold on to your loved ones and pray." Again, the only defense is Christianity. Well, not necessarily. There's a lot of kinds of prayer. I'll give him a half point on this one.
Yeah. So then he like tells Dagwood basically to go like restrain this person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Dagwood gives her a big hug.
Yeah.
Which I guess is fine.
Yeah.
But it's weird.
He seems like he gives really good hugs. He's a large man.
So they're moving closer. To the energy thing,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Suddenly the screen on the
yes,
Sequest
yes.
has a man, and the man's like, "Dad, turn back! Dad, I need you!"
It's Bridger's son. Bridger's hallucination is his son telling him to turn back and not complete this mission. And what holds him, what grounds him, is Commander Ford putting out a hand and resting it on the captain's hand.
Yeah!
Yes!
It's such a good moment!
Because mm-hmm.
Bridger's just, like, looking around like, no, he's not there, is he? Is like, he's, like,
yeah.
free. And... just Ford's like on his task, but he just reaches behind him and is
yeah.
like, "I got you, I got you,
yeah.
you're fine." Ford holds this place together.
Yes, Ford is the welding in the joist.
It's, oh, my heart.
So this steals the captain's resolve to order ramming speed. We're breaching this fucker,
which is a weird choice.
Yes.
I don't know why that's the choice. So, you know, everyone's, like, bracing for collision, and they crash into the station.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
in a way that, like, they can totally use an airlock to just, like, walk onto it.
Well, there's a forward airlock in the nose section, apparently. We're just finding this out.
And so Bridger and Dr. Shelton run through onto the station. There's mm-hmm. so much wind. There's so much smoke.
Well, that's how you know it's containing so much evil inside.
Obviously.
That it sucked out. It's an evil sucker.
Yeah.
Gotta
suck hard.
So they get to the central containment station, and Dr. Shelton's like, this pipe here, this conduit, we have to break this tube. And now the psychic reverberations are shaking them to their core. The late young Mr. Bridger is standing behind him saying, no, don't do it. I need it. I need this to live.
And Dr. Shelton, like, starts to go to reach for it, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna burn, and he's like, no, it's an illusion, and he goes and he grabs this tube, and his hand turns into a skeleton, and he screams and flies back.
But Bridger finds the resolve to take this pipe and disconnect it and smash it to pieces on the ground.
And then that, like, shuts off the evil, and everyone senses it.
The angry cloud collapses. But so does the dome of this station. Ah!
So they gotta run. They gotta run back onto the Sequest.
Narrow escape. They pull away, and Bridger orders them to fire the lasers.
Fire the lasers. Fire everything.
We have lasers now.
We got lasers. We gotta blow it up.
And we shoot the lasers to melt the seabed and bury the station in lava. Why didn't they do this 10 minutes ago?
That's a good question.
Well, you didn't have to ram it if you can bury it in lava. I think that would break the tube.
That's a good question. That's a good question. But so they head back to the colony, and Bridger goes to med bay, and Wendy is there actually in a doctor's coat.
Mm-hmm.
That she can't button up, though. And we see that Dr. Shelton is there, but he has aged. They say 20 years.
Yeah.
It looks like far more than 20 years.
In a single day, but he is at peace. Because while he may have aged, he has also gained back his soul.
Yes. And Bridger's like, well, why didn't I age? And it's like, because it didn't have your soul at the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not like mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so back on the colony, people seem good.
Everyone's
good. People are walking around with baskets of fruit.
They got to bring it to those closet kids.
Yeah. Does anyone let Laura's kids out?
No one can. They're very good at following directions.
And so Laura's like, you know, thank you for not letting me make a fool out of myself, Bridger.
Mm-hmm.
I did love you more than I can tell. And he smooches her and is like, yeah, I loved you too.
Kiss
and
that's the lady.
Something we'll always have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, like, we're not acting on this.
So we say our goodbyes, and it's on to the next mission, as the final words of the episode are Captain Bridger turning and saying, take us home, Commander.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's home?
I'm
Florida?
Florida, I guess. The new UEO...
Do you guys go to dock a lot?
They go to dock a lot.
Okay.
There's a lot of land in season two.
Yeah.
But that's not the end. And of course, it is time for fish time.
Fished.
Jonathan Brandis is in SeaWorld Orlando talking, of course, about dolphins and how dolphins actually communicate with their human handlers through hand signals.
Yes. And they communicate with their each other with clicks and whistles and use their melon.
There's this little thing called a melon on their noggin, and that is how they interpret sound bouncing back at them to navigate their environment. Isn't that a wonderful thing to learn about dolphins?
I knew this. kind of the premise of the show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's the various things dolphins can do.
Thank you, Jonathan Brandis, for telling me the thing that we learned in episode one of season one. Yeah. So do you got a Bob fact?
I have a bit of a Bob fact.
Yeah.
Bob went to divinity school for my fact.
Oh.
I wanted to know, do fish practice religion?
Mm.
The answer is absolutely not. That's a ridiculous thing to think. But
shark bait, ooh ha ha.
That's not a religion. That's a cultural practice. So
What if it is a religion?
So instead, I want to talk about how fish figure into several religions of the world.
The bumper sticker.
Exactly. The ichthys, better known as the Jesus fish, from bumper stickers all over the place.
I didn't know it had a different name.
Yep. There is the legend that in times of like the Roman Empire and Christian persecution, Christian on the down low could like draw one arc, and if the person they were with drew the other arc to complete the ichthys, now we know. We found each other. We can be Christian and not thrown to the lions.
But what if they're not, and then you just sold yourself out?
They might throw you to the lions. It was a bad time.
I feel like that wasn't a great thing to initiate.
Christianity, of course, you know, the loaves and the fishes. I will make you fishers of men. Many of the apostles were fishermen before joining Jesus's ministry. There you go.
Okay.
While in Judaism, many parables in the Torah affiliate fish with the Jewish people. The fish is a symbol of fertility and luck, which is why it is a traditional food for Rosh Hashanah.
Mm.
Gefilte fish, very famous for both that purpose and as a cultural touchstone of Judaism. In Islam, in the Quran, the fish is a symbol of eternal life and of knowledge. In Muslim tradition, Al-Kid, known as the guide of Moses and Alexander the Great, is often depicted as riding on the back of a fish over the river of life. Here is a painting of such a depiction.
That is such a tiny fish.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking a much bigger fish.
It's muscular. It's the Tony Piccolo of the sea.
That is a powerful little guy.
In Hinduism, one of the avatars of Vishnu is Matsya. In fact, the first avatar, often depicted as a fish or half man, half fish. Here is such a depiction.
Mermaid.
A little bit.
A little mermaidy.
And in Buddhism, one of the eight auspicious signs is two golden fish. The golden fish were originally associated with the Ganges and Yamuna rivers, the two most sacred rivers in India. As fish swim in water without fear of drowning, Buddha has no fear of drowning in the suffering cycle of samsara. There you go. Religion fish.
There you go.
Darlin, do you have a Bob and or fish fact of some description?
So I got a few little facts for you about parapsychology.
Oh, a brain fact.
Yeah, so people have been looking into parapsychology stuff for very, very long time.
And this is when you have a psychology and another psychology.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And so in 1853, a chemist by the name of Robert Hare conducted experiments with mediums. It was kind of like the start of like parapsychology stuff.
Sure. As a scientific endeavor.
Yes. And in 1882, the Society for Psychical Research was founded in London, again in 1882. It still exists.
Mm.
This is still going. And its formation was the first systematic effort to organize scientists and scholars to investigate paranormal phenomena. And in the U.S., in 1911, Stanford University became the first academic institution in the U.S. specifically to study extrasensory perception and psychokinesis in laboratory settings.
Did they find any?
Well, after conducting 10,000 experiments, they concluded that statistical treatments of the data failed to reveal any cause beyond chance. So there you go. There's a little insight into parapsychology. There's far more out there.
Sorry, Dr. Smith. Sorry.
Yeah.
Bridger did get beat up by a ghost that one time, though.
He did.
That one's real.
Well, that was because of the mushroom.
Oh, okay. Sure.
The fungi to make you breathe. Air. Just say it's the ghosts! Ugh. You think they would have harvested it?
Yeah, that's good sponge.
They should have harvested the sponge, and then they could have grown more sponges, and then they could have had oxygen in many places.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have had to have the issue of the oxygen regeneration facilities being blown up because they could have just had sponges everywhere.
Yeah, a sponge in every home. Make your own oxygen.
They would have saved the future.
Mm-hmm. If there is that little, if the existence of atmospheric oxygen is that precarious.
Yes.
I think they would make candles illegal.
Probably.
I would make candles illegal.
I also feel like you would have more stations to where if three fail, people don't start dying.
It's not the extermination of the human race.
Yeah.
A little more redundancy.
I feel like you should have twice as many
as you need. A little more redundancy.
Or like smaller ones. Right? Like it shouldn't all rely on like the 8 across the planet. Like how about it's the 32 across the planet? So like you need more of them to fail kill everyone.
Well, they weren't predicting that the dark age of genetics would go so bad.
Well, if only, you know, people could like see the future and read minds.
Sorry, Dr. Smith, you're fake and not real. So anyway, what do you think about this episode, dear?
This episode is so weird.
It's my favorite so far.
Yeah.
I think this is the best season 2 episode of the first stretch.
Of the first stretch.
Of like of what we will call disc 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's action. It just goes. It goes yeah. so...
It is dense.
It's dense. It does feel, though, a little like they were... It's what we've talked about through it. It's like there's a little bit too much options going on like, what we're focusing... Like, how we're focusing on the thing we're focusing on.
Sure.
Right? Like, oh, it's the devil. It's going to be a devil problem. It's not a devil. It's going to be this. Oh, it's a demon. It's... Oh, but now it's an energy, like, there's just, like, so many things.
Mm-hmm. It is a demon because demons are truly the darkness within the heart of man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. This episode, like, works dramatically. It is dense. A lot of events happen, but I never get the feeling of things are just happening, like, last week.
Yeah.
there are reasons, there's setups, and the cast has moments to be themselves. I don't like saying that in Brody's case. I don't want him to be the guy that this episode makes him.
Yeah, Brody. not cool.
But while I don't think it fits in season 1 of Sequest, this does point to the guy Carlton Eastlake would be in seasons 3 and 4 of Farscape.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a guy who can use a cast, who can go for big swings and go for, try to get something that, like, means something and says something.
Yeah.
And I like all of his Farscape scripts better than this one, but Carlton Eastlake, as we go forward, will make my personal favorite and least favorite episodes for the rest of Sequest. There's no middle of the road with me and this man's Sequest scripts.
I will say this episode does do a good job of giving a lot of characters screen time and things to do.
Yes, yes.
Not all.
No.
But a lot.
There has never been a Sequest episode where the entire main cast gets a really strong showing.
Well, and you can't because there's really...
Because there's so many of them.
There's too many. But I do think this is one that, like, everyone that's featured...
Yes.
Gets, like, what feels, even if it's not fully equal, but it feels like an equal amount.
Right. O'Neill, Ortiz, Henderson, backseat. Everyone else, though.
Well, I feel like Henderson's a different level.
Yeah.
Ortiz and O'Neill are, like, a step up from her.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got, like, Tony.
Yeah,
Step, you know, just above. And then you're kind of equal footing with the other
for
features.
Everyone else,
you know,
including
Brody,
our
Lucas,
guest stars.
Dagwood, guest stars, Ford, etc. So I feel like it doesn't feel as like, I guess like that anyone, aside from Henderson, she's left out. But like the fact that like Ortiz and O'Neill get that like little bit, it doesn't feel like they're completely left out.
Right. O'Neill does remind us that he sees things through a Christian lens.
Yes.
This is the face of
this
God.
This is true.
What does that say for how he conceives of God, that everyone else sees this thing as Satan? And like, that's God.
It says a lot.
What church did you go to, man?
Scary ones. Catholic ones.
You getting, like, snake bites out there? What's happening, man?
He was raised to be fearful.
But I guess that's what we're going to leave you with today, yeah. Dear Whiskers listener.
Mm-hmm. So, you know what you should do? You should go leave us a rating and review wherever you listen and mm-hmm, let us mm-hmm. know how much you've enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, I am so happy about our 5.0 rating on Spotify. I'd love for even more people to participate in it.
Yes.
Wouldn't please. That be nice?
That'd be so nice.
Yeah.
That'd be so nice. Can also, like, you know, if you leave us, like, a 5-star review with a nice little comment on, like, Apple Podcasts, we might, you know, read it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Another thing we would absolutely love and appreciate, and you know it is someone's birthday, is to go tell some people about Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding Sequest. Spread the show around, spread the links, and say, hey, here's something I enjoy about this show, because I know you enjoy something about this show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then it could be my birthday present, because you all like me.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't do it, I'll know. Because
of the tickles you talked about.
Because of the tickles. Oh,
the parapsychology. The
parapsychology tickles.
Oh, that's what Bridger says with some of his girlfriends. So, the last thing I'm going to ask for is if you would like to join the conversation or just see or follow along with our announcements, we are on Blue Sky at Whiskers. That is WSKRS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, so you mm-hmm. should, you know, go follow, go join, etc.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun place to be online, and dang it, there aren't a lot of those left.
True. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.